The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Understand how healing works? By understanding the process, we can not only heal ourselves, but understand why. Welcome to the Healing Power Hour with host Suzanne Hill. In our program, we will show you the healing modalities and approaches that you can use to heal yourself, no matter the illness or the symptoms. Now, here is your host, Suzanne Hill.
Hi, this is Suzanne Hill, and welcome back to the Healing Power Hour. Thanks so much for listening in and making this show a success. And by the way, do go to Facebook and find the Healing Power Hour fan page and hit like if you like it. It seems to be the easiest way to get information around. So today we have what I find is a particularly fascinating topic and one that I think is relevant to most everyone, and that is the topic of fear. If we're truly honest with ourselves, we all have fears about something. For some people, it's fear of failure. For some, it's fear of intimacy. Maybe it's fear that others won't love us or will reject us somehow. Or maybe it's fear that we won't ever get what we really want in our lives, that we can't make our dreams come true. Our fears are so vast, personal, and different, and we can have fears that seem like trivialities to someone else, but to us, they're like this bottomless pit that we sometimes fall into and can't get out of. Well, the good news is that fears of all types can absolutely be overcome. And that's why I titled today's show, Clearing Fear from the Body. Because not only is it possible, but when we uncover a fear and transform it energetically, it's like hitting an oil well. We unlock so much trapped energy that releasing a fear can radically alter how we experience our life. Now, one of the greatest myths we tend to have about fear is that we can overcome our fears through sheer mental force or willpower, through the power of the mind. In my experience as an acupuncturist, I have not found this to be true. Because what I've observed is that for all of us, there is in fact a very physical component to fear. Our fears, whatever they may be, are actually woven into our physicality, into our cells, our blood, our muscles, our organs, and so forth. So working with our physical bodies is one of the most powerful and effective ways to help us overcome our fears. In my acupuncture practice, when I have a patient who's grappling with a fear that they can't seem to overcome, I'll often recommend them to take up any kind of martial arts, as I've seen that this is a terrific way to clear fear from the physical body, which then translates into feeling less fear overall. That's why my guest for today is Master Mary Claire Bland, owner of the Eastside Taekwondo here in New York City. Master Mary Claire currently holds a 4th-degree black belt in Taekwondo. She's also a certified Go Shindo teacher, for those of you who are unfamiliar. Go Shindo is a samurai sword. And as well, Mary Claire is a certified yoga instructor and Reiki master. So Mary Claire will be joining us at about 20 past the hour to talk about her experience as a martial artist and how she's seen people who've taken on Taekwondo develop the ability to conquer their fears and step into their power. So stay tuned for that. Now, fear is one of the trickiest and most complicated of emotions because energetically, fear is cold and contractive. Remember that emotions either expand or contract our energy, and expansion of our energy allows our body processes to work optimally, and contraction of our energy will slow down these same processes. What makes fear tricky and complicated is that fear is one of the emotions that can slow down the flow of energy in our bodies and even bring it to a halt, and it does so very quickly. We can become frozen, paralyzed, and numb almost instantaneously. So what's then challenging is to unthaw this frozen energy and shift one's energy from a static state of no movement to a dynamic state of movement. This can be a lot more difficult than to redirect inappropriate movement, like when we have destructive anger. That's an example of inappropriate movement. Well, in Chinese medicine, the emotion of fear is traditionally associated with the energy of the kidneys and the bladder, and make up what we call the water element. So when someone has fear, one of the key places it shows up in the body is in the energy pathways or meridians associated with the kidney and the bladder. Though, truth be told, I've seen it show up in any number of the meridians in the body. It just depends on what the fear is. But sticking for a moment with traditional Chinese medicine and the association with the kidney and the bladder, well, the bladder is an obvious association, right? When we're extremely frightened, especially as children, we can wet our pants. As far as the kidneys are concerned, we say in Chinese medicine that kidney energy governs the hair. So if we're in a continued state of fear, for example, our hair can turn white, sometimes overnight, or we can also lose our hair. Our hair sheds much more easily when we're afraid. Kidney energy also governs the ears and hearing. And sometimes when we have intense fear, we can either lose hearing temporarily, or we can have ringing in our ears, which is called tinnitus, or some people call it tinnitus. And on the other hand, we have shock, which is an extreme state of fear. And shock causes immediate and overwhelming cold in the body. That's why if you ever take a first aid course, the first thing they tell you to do is to put a blanket over the person who's in shock. And lastly, kidney energy is also tied to what we call in Chinese medicine, Jing. That's J-I-N-G, or life essence. Jing is often explained to the novice as being like a candle. When we're alive, our candle is lit, and when the candle burns to the end, our jing, our essence, is finished, and then we expire like the light of the candle. So kidney energy is associated with our life essence, our vital force. Now, what I've found as an acupuncturist is that what makes up an essential part of this vital force is our soul purpose. Whether or not we know it, we all have a soul purpose, a life calling. Now, that soul purpose may be a particular profession. For example, we might be called to be a teacher or a builder or an artist. But alternatively, our soul purpose can be less about a particular profession than it can be about learning a specific lesson in life. For example, maybe we're here to learn how to trust again, or we're here to learn how to use power responsibly. When these types of things are our primary purpose, it matters less what avenue we take to learn that lesson. The most important thing is to, in fact, learn that lesson at all. So if I'm learning how to use power responsibly, for example, perhaps I learn that primarily through becoming a mother. But I could also learn that lesson by being a manager in a software company or by being a general in the army. The reason I mentioned this last association with kidney energy is because I found that when patients have strayed far away from the path of their soul purpose, it brings up a deep fear in the body that somehow we're wasting our time. When fear shows up in this way, it isn't so much that someone's hair turns white or that their hands go cold, but it typically manifests as a low-level anxiety that the patient just can't seem to shake. No matter how much they might achieve in life, their soul knows that they're not quite on the path of their purpose, and it causes a restlessness and an anxiety within them that nothing can settle except finding their way back to their path again. By the way, medications like Clonopin, Ativan, and other anti-anxiety meds, just so you understand, the way they work in the body is to completely numb the fear in the kidney meridians. If someone has fear and I run my finger along the pathway of their kidney meridian on their legs, I can feel fear on that pathway. But when someone is taking an anti-anxiety medication and I run my finger along that same pathway, my finger will actually start to turn numb. When I first felt that in someone, I had my aha moment. Oh, so that's how those meds work. They shut down your feelings so you can't feel the fear. But the problem is you can't feel anything else either. Just to give you a quick case study, I used to have a student in my meditation class who was really very sensitive, and he could always feel the energy quite easily when we meditated or when we did the Qigong exercises. At one point, he was going through a very difficult time at work and having extreme anxiety about his job because his life calling was, in fact, to be an artist, but he wasn't able to figure out how to make that work yet. So instead, he found a job and was working in finance, something he really didn't like so much. So the doctor prescribed him some Clonopin, one of the major anti-anxiety meds, and it worked very well to calm down his anxiety. But the side effect was that he couldn't feel any energy during meditation or Qigong after that. When he sat, all he could feel was that he was sitting. And when he did the Qigong exercises, he could feel his hands moving through the air, but that was it. He couldn't feel the Qi. Once he finally went off the Klonopin, it took several weeks of detoxing his body, but after that he was able to feel the energy again. From a clinical perspective, what would have helped his anxiety the most in lieu of medication would have been for him to find a way to do his art no matter what, but that's not necessarily an easy task. So let's now look at how fear manifests in the chakras, or the energy centers that originate at the midline of the body. Now, fear can show up in any one of the chakras, but I will focus today on the first, third, and fifth chakras for the purposes of today's discussion, because these are the most effective places to focus on when you want to clear fear from your body. So beginning with the root, the first chakra is the energy center at the base of the spine. And this chakra feeds the legs, the hips, and the sexual organs, and it's also intimately connected to bone marrow and blood. So it's therefore one of the primary chakras relating to family, who are our blood, so to speak. When we have fear in the first chakra, it primarily shows up as fear that you don't have a right to be here, fear of having an opinion that matters, fear of taking up space, fear of being noticed, and fear of not feeling or being safe. How fear in the first chakra manifests physically is that you'll often see people standing who cross one leg over the other, or if they're sitting down, they'll cross their legs maybe even twice, maybe even cross their toes. It sounds funny, but people do this. People with fear in their first chakra also tend to have very cold feet, knees, or buttocks. If you remember back to last week's discussion on voice, these are people who live in first circle as their default. Pathologically, weakness coming from fear in the first chakra will often show up as autoimmune disorders or disorders of the blood, ranging anywhere from anemia to chronic fatigue, though it's certainly not limited to that. Fears in the first chakra are typically either fears that we came in with or fears that got created very early on in life before we were even verbal. So these fears can be the hardest to talk our way out of because they took root before we could even speak. And as a consequence, first chakra fears are very much helped by working the physical body, especially the legs. Taekwondo, of course, is a fantastic way in this regard because of all the kicking and balance work, and we're forced to move. We can't be frozen and in paralysis. But spinning is also another way to clear fear from this part of the body, spinning, the cycling. Because spinning is primarily focusing on the lower half of the body, and you're working with resistance, so it forces you to be in your body. So you have to have enough energy to push the pedals. And so if you're in your body, you have enough energy to push the pedals. The other major thing you're going to want to do if you have fear in your first chakra is to recreate a family system for yourself. Now, I don't mean go out and start a new family, though you might. I mean surround yourself with good, positive people who are like a family to you, but the family you always wanted, not necessarily the one that you came in with, if that was a negative experience. Surround yourself with people who want you to take up space, who want to hear what you have to say and value it. Sometimes it may even be moving in with other people so that you can feel what it feels like to be with other people and be comfortable with that. But in these cases, you don't want to pick people who are energetically just like you. You may feel most comfortable with people who also have a weak first chakra, but instead you want to pick people who have healthy structure in their lives, who are optimistic and bold, and have no fear about having opinions. These are people who don't question that it's okay for them to take up space. Because these are excellent people for you to model your energy afterward, and it's going to help you expand your first chakra. Moving on to the third chakra is the energy center located at the solar plexus, and it feeds the energy of the stomach, pancreas, spleen, liver, and gallbladder. Fear in the third chakra includes fear of not being enough, fear of not achieving what one hopes to achieve, fear that one is nobody without achievement, fear of not being respected, and fear of not taking action. People with fear in their third chakra will often have a weakness in the digestive system that includes any of the organs I just mentioned, the stomach, pancreas, spleen, liver, and gallbladder. It also includes eating disorders, whether you're overeating or you're undereating. Fear of not being enough, for example, creates an energetic deficiency that we're going to want to fill. And food is what we think is a good way to fill that deficiency, or at least it feels sort of good temporarily. But when you don't have enough energy feeding these organs, you're not going to be able to digest properly, so you can have the highest quality food, that you're eating, but your body won't be able to properly extract the nutrients from that food. Now, because the third chakra is the primary chakra of taking action, in order to strengthen this chakra, you must take action. I cannot emphasize this point enough. You must take action. And so exercise is one major way to do this. That's why people who exercise a lot have a natural sense of go, 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 do, do, do. For those of you who can be turned off by these kind of people, let me just say that what you want to understand is that your own weakness in this third chakra is what's going to make you be intimidated by these people who take action. And secondly, you're more likely going to be turned off by someone who takes action if their actions are self-serving and not inclusive of others. But we actually like people who tend to take action that serves and include others. And there are people who do this quite well. Oprah Winfrey is a great example of someone who takes action in a way that includes and benefits others. Physically, two of the best things you can do to strengthen the third chakra in your home are sit-ups and crunches. So add that to your to-do list. Takes all of 1 minute a day. And one of the reasons martial arts is so good at strengthening the third chakra is because it's all about moving forward and taking action. You step forward and you punch. You step forward and you kick. You step forward and you break a board. And even if you don't step forward, your energy is moving forward for that kick, that punch, and the breaking of that board. Whether or not you've been historically a person of action, you will certainly start to become a person of action once you take up a martial art because it activates that forward moving energy. Moving on to the fifth chakra, the energy center at the throat that typically governs the thyroid, the larynx, and our voice, fear in the fifth chakra shows up as fear of speaking the truth, fear of speaking one's own truth, fear of stopping negativity by speaking up, fear that one will destroy with one's words, fear that you won't please someone with what you say, that you won't be liked, and lastly, fear to have authority. Physically, this can show up as tightness in the throat, even to the extent that you feel a lump in your throat. You may have voice anomalies, such as a permanently scratchy or dry throat, and pathologically, this most often shows up as thyroid disorders, typically hypothyroid or underactive thyroid. Hyperthyroid, the overactive thyroid, is generally more often related to anger in the throat. And singing, chanting, and public speaking are terrific avenues to clear the fear from the fifth chakra. And with martial arts, the reason it helps in this regard is because as you kick and punch, you very often need to utter a kia or some other guttural intonation in conjunction with taking action. So the first, third, and fifth chakras are the primary chakras you want to start working with if you want to start clearing fear from your body. And here's the thing to understand. When the New Age movement first got started, one of the major precepts that was bandied about was that the body and the spirit, or the soul, were two different things, and that the body was inferior to the soul. The needs of the body were considered base and low, and the needs of the soul were supreme. They were lofty. They were high. But the real truth is that the body, the mind, and the soul are all a continuum. The body is merely the physical manifestation of the soul, and the mind is the intellectual manifestation of the soul. So any fears you have in your body or mind are also fears at the level of the soul. And likewise, any fears that your soul has will absolutely be manifest in your body and your mind. So once you start physically working to clear fear from these chakras, you're going to absolutely start to feel better mentally and emotionally. Remember that acupuncture is always incredibly helpful to this end because it opens up your channels, raises your frequency, and fear cannot coexist at this higher frequency. And the reason why martial arts is so powerful is because it's excellent at expanding the energies of the first, third, and fifth chakras simultaneously. Martial arts is about taking action on your feet while giving voice to the power within. Beyond that, martial arts has a whole philosophy behind it that is about building one's character in a positive way, so it's very spiritual. Done the right way, when we practice martial arts, we're practicing integration of our body, mind, and soul, and this raises it to the level of an art. So it's not just a sport. It's an art that helps you take your power back and integrate the different aspects of yourself. So before we go to break, I just want to close by saying that one of the great gifts of our fears, no matter how much we can't stand them at times, is that when we confront with and work with a fear, We have to go inside of ourselves and pull up powerful forces from within that we may have never even noticed existed before. And that's why, in retrospect, overcoming fear is always a beautiful thing. Okay, now we're going to go to break. And when we come back, we'll be talking with Master Mary Claire Bland, fourth degree black belt in Taekwondo. Thank you so much for listening.
Find out which guests are being featured this week. Read our network press releases and read the blog posts from your favorite hosts. Go to iradioblog.com today, powered by the Voice America Talk Radio Network.
Tune in to Your Health Workshop Weekly for the most up-to-date information and support on a variety of health issues. Host Mary Shulman, a best-selling author and patient advocate, will speak with guests and answer your questions on items like thyroid issues, hair loss, hormone balance, diet, and more. We'll bring you the support and tools so that you can be educated on what to do next when visiting your doctor and other medical professionals. Your Health Workshop airs live every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific on Voice America Health and Wellness.
No matter what our age is, health deserves our utmost attention. But how do you achieve optimal wellness? Tune in to Ask Lorna Live. Your host, Lorna Vanderhaeg, will provide research-backed solutions that will have you feeling fit and fabulous. It all comes down to hormones. We'll show you how it works with mainstream medicine along with nutritional medicine. Listen for Ask Lorna Live every Wednesday at 6 a.m. Pacific Time, 9 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to the Healing Power Hour with Suzanne Hill. To connect with the program today, please call in to 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. If you prefer, you may send an email to turtlebayacupuncture@gmail.com. Now, back to the Healing Power Hour.
So welcome back to the Healing Power Hour. This is Suzanne Hill, and I'm sitting here with Master Mary Claire Bland of Eastside Taekwondo in New York City. Welcome, Mary Claire.
Thank you, Suzanne. It's great to be here.
Mary Claire is the owner of the Eastside Taekwondo. Master Mary Claire holds a fourth degree black belt in Taekwondo. She's a certified Goshin Do teacher, which is a samurai sword. And as well, she's a certified yoga instructor and Reiki master. So she's a very, very talented individual, and I'm very happy to have her. And Mary Claire, I wanted to start by asking you, since this episode is about clearing fear from the body, can you talk about your own observations or experience in running a dojang? Do you feel that Taekwondo helps people clear fear?
I know it helps people clear fear. And if I can backtrack a little bit, I'd love to just, if it's okay with you, talk a little bit about my personal experience when I started my martial arts training.
Absolutely.
And then, okay. Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting that you say that it helps you clear fear. I started martial arts as an adult, not as a kid like most people do. And walking into martial arts dojang was something that I'd even put off for a long time. I had known for a while I wanted to take a class just because I started doing these kickboxing classes and I loved them. But I couldn't even verbalize why I didn't want to start taking a formal martial art. I guess I just didn't know what to do or where to start or anything like that. And once I finally started my practice, there were many things that I had this preconceived notion about that I couldn't do. I didn't think I could take Taekwondo in general. I didn't think I could break a board just because I was afraid of all of these things. And gradually, one by one, I started realizing not only when I did these things was I not afraid, but once I did them, I became so empowered and I just felt fantastic walking out of every class. I just wanted to do it more and more and more. And I remember I was getting ready to take my black belt test. It was a couple weeks before, and I was talking to this other woman named Christina, who is a red belt, same as me. It was the old school, and the red belt back then went directly before black. And I said, well, Christina, aren't you afraid that we're going to have to spar on this test? They're bringing in people from other martial arts schools we've never met. And she goes, of course I'm afraid. She goes, but that's why I do this. For me, Getting my black belt is all about conquering my fears, and martial arts is all about conquering fears. And right then, it's something that I had always kind of thought of in the back of my mind, and I knew it for myself, but I'd never heard anyone up until that point put it so clearly and precisely. But anyway, I went on to get, sorry.
No, I was just, you don't have many people walking in saying, I'm signing up to clear my fear.
No, in fact, most people don't want to walk in because they're afraid. So it's always this catch 22. And maybe we could talk about that in a minute. If I could just share one more example from my life about helps you conquer
fear. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So when I was a little kid, this is, you'll understand where I'm going from in a second with this. I was always afraid of the high dive. My dad used to always, because my dad's one of these crazy people who has no concept of the fear of heights. He views, being 1,000 feet up the same as being at sea level. It is it's inconsequential to him. And he used to always try to make me jump off the high dive. And I never wanted to do it because I was terrified. I was terrified of the height. I was terrified of having my face in the water. Everything. So it was always, for my whole kid, was one of the things that I was always most scared of. And I never wanted to go to the swimming pool with him because I was afraid of that. Anyway, jump to a couple years ago. We went on this big family reunion up to this place called Sun River in Utah. Oregon. And there was great hiking, and my family's, this part of the family is a lot, is really into that hiking and out of doors. And anyway, we went on this hike one time, and part of the hike was there's this pool of water, and there were these rocks, and you could jump, it was probably only 10, 15 feet, and you could jump off the pool of rocks into the water, and they were all lining up to do that. And I'm like, oh no, here we go again. But I'm like, okay, so I'm terrified, and I thought, you know, I'm an adult. I don't have to do this. Who cares? And then in the back of my mind, I thought, you know, how stupid are you? You're a black belt. If you're a black belt, you can jump off 10 ridiculous little feet into the air, into the water. And you know, I walked up and suddenly I wasn't afraid anymore. I did it. And same thing with my scuba diving. I used to be afraid to get off the side of the boat with all my scuba gear on and like drop into the water. And then I think, you know, I'm a black belt. I can do this. And the truth is once, I mean, yes, there is. So I guess I'm trying to say is yes, the belt system is an entire pathway or stair step to conquering your fears. But at the end, there is something at the top, which is once you go and achieve and walk up all these little stair steps and take all these little fears that you're conquering one by one, at the end of it, once you get a black belt, somehow it's not like it turns you into a superhero, but somehow it just helps you not be afraid. And then to
well,
close
it sounds,
the thought.
Oh. Yeah, no, go ahead. No, I don't
okay.
Have to go.
Okay, and then to close this off, I see this, and you asked how I see this in my everyday experience of running the Dojang all the time. And we teach a lot of kids, and I can't tell you how many kids will get a new belt, maybe at a yellow belt, not even a high-level belt, maybe an orange belt, maybe a green belt, and all of a sudden that kid will be able to do something that they were never able to do before. And I ask them, and they'll always say, because they're little kids and they're cute, they'll say something like, you know, I think that yellow belt really did give me special powers.
Oh, that's very cute.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, as adults, we probably think that too. I think what I hear and what you're saying isn't so much that we're never going to not have fear, because we need fear as a human being to survive. But when you start to conquer fears piece by piece on a pathway, such as getting a black belt, then it actually puts you at choice about something. That you can recognize the fear, and then you can choose, I can conquer my fear, I cannot conquer my fear, but you're not doing something because the fear has overpowered you.
Yeah, you're not a slave to your fears anymore. I mean, some fear, and I think it also helps you cherry pick fears, if that doesn't sound silly, meaning some fears I think are perfectly legitimate.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is perfectly legitimate to walk through a really dark, scary neighborhood in the middle of the night, unprotected, if you know people around you have guns and there's a drug war going on.
Mm-hmm.
That's a perfectly legitimate fear. And I think martial arts helps you able to understand what are good fears, but a lot of fears are not legitimate, and a lot of fears are just based upon your past experiences, either in this lifetime or past, and they may not even be relevant. And I see so many people before they come into a martial arts program, and they're letting those fears cripple them and really reduce the quality of their life.
Now, you alluded to the fact that some people are intimidated by stepping into a martial arts studio. In Korean, we call it a dojang. What do you think these people are afraid of?
That's funny. Just because I think I don't think some people are afraid. I think almost everybody is, if not afraid, at least they're intimidated or they have questions. In fact, this is one of the biggest problems we have, that I have as running a martial arts school, is how to make this accessible to people and how to help them make the first step. As far as what's holding them back, I think what is personally prevents different people from coming into a martial arts school is very different, and it's usually that the fears that they have in everyday life. For example, people are afraid of commitment. Okay, well, if you're afraid of a commitment, you're probably going to be afraid of going in and getting and having to go to the belt system. A big one that I get a lot is not being good enough, which definitely relates back to all the chakra issues that you were talking about before in the weak chakras. Here's a great example of this is we started running this boot camp class. And one of the reasons we're doing it is I think it's a great stepping stone for people that want to do a martial arts program and are afraid or just need a little baby step to mm-hmm. do something different. And I was, we just started it a couple weeks ago, and the first class we didn't have enough people, so I ended up having to do the class myself and take the class along with someone else and partner up with another woman. And this is very interesting. And we were doing a couple kicks. We had just started doing a couple roundhouse kicks, and she got so frustrated. She's like, I'm like, and she wanted to stop and she wanted to quit. And I said, what's the problem? And she goes, it just makes me so angry that you do this better than me. I want to be the best. And I said, wait a second. I said, listen to yourself. I said, this is the first time you've ever done this. I've been doing this for Lord knows how many years. And I said, and I'm a martial arts master. I said, if you're as good as I am the first day, there's a serious problem here. But I get that a lot. I have so many people say that they're afraid they're not going to be good at it, which I always tell people. I get this with kids. I get this with adults anyway. And my response to that is, yes, of course you're not supposed to be good at it. You're supposed to be miserable at it the first time. Just like if you're taking Italian. If you are from Italy and you're raised in Italy, are you ever going to take an Italian lesson? No, because you already know that. You're going to take something like, oh, I don't know, Chinese that you don't know a word of. You're not supposed to be good at it when you walk in. You're supposed to be the worst one in the room. But that's okay. That's how it's supposed to be. And if not, but people don't understand that because of their fears.
So was she able to take that in?
I think
she did. Did she quit the class or did she stay?
She did do the rest of the class. We'll find out if she comes back. In the end of the class, she actually felt really great and really empowered. And she's like, that was awesome. And so I think she will come back actually just because she felt so wonderful. It's a great release beat. And I know this woman fairly well, and she'd been frustrated with a lot about his stuff at her work life, and she was able to vent a lot of that. And I think she felt great. So we'll see if she comes back.
Now, what are the, you mentioned fear of commitment. What are other reasons that make people drop out of attaining a black belt?
In general, I think it's they're afraid. There are so many fears on a personal level that people have to conquer along the path to a black belt. And instead, it may not even have anything to do with the art. It may have to do with something totally extraneous, but through this practice, it will somehow bring up that fear. And if people don't want to confront that fear, they will eventually quit. It may be as simple as not feeling good enough about yourself to carve out the kind of time. A lot of people don't think that they're worth it to prioritize themselves and come train twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that can make people quit, I had one woman who she's been practicing with me for a while, and I almost lost her back when she was taking her green belt test because we found out, had written the answers to some of the questions and the forms on her hands in the test. And I mean, this is not like a 12-year-old. I mean, this is a woman in her 50s, and mm-hmm. her whole fear was actually having to do something on her own without any help, without a crib sheet. She had always, throughout her life, she comes from a very wealthy, prestigious family. So she'd always had a father, a family, a husband take care of her. Even in her job, she was always very well protected based upon the job and her father's situation in that company. So she had never actually had to do anything on her own. And she was just afraid of having that confidence in herself and just doing something by herself without someone supporting her.
Now, was she able to get past that?
She is almost a black belt now. She will always talk, and she is one of my, we talk very, it was one of the most uncomfortable moments of my life, during this test, and, the other instructor that was giving the test with me, to this day, we joke about it and kind of cringe at the same time, but she's very open about it now. And in fact, she uses this experience and she will say, this was the turning point for me. This was the point that I almost walked out of that room and I almost never came back. And somehow she got home and she thought it through and she said, you know, I want to do this. I want to do this for myself. I can do this.
Wow, that's very empowering.
Yes, yes. You know, and I have another example, speaking of empowering, if you don't mind. Kid who's been training with me since he was 6, and he's 13 now.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a kid, as he's gotten older, he's had troubles with respect, and he's had troubles just with authority, even though he has been training for a long time. And I think a lot of it has to do with eventually some kind of a weak self-esteem or not feeling great about himself. And he had a big, 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 problem in the first tournament that he went to. And, I didn't think he was ever going to train in tournaments ever again. And then this Saturday he went to a tournament and he faced the fears that he had and he won a silver medal, which for him was amazing considering the fact that he was never going to take a class ever again. And he came to me and it was just yesterday. And, I said, well, you know, Jamie, how'd it go in the tournament? And he goes, Master Mary Claire, he goes, I did great. And he got this huge smile on his face. He goes, I feel so empowered after that. He goes, I'm so glad you guys made me go back and do it. And the funny thing is I've never seen him as respectful, as kind and considerate as he was yesterday after he got that medal.
Wow. That's a good story. I like that story. So it actually brings up a question that I have for you. Is there a way that people can practice Taekwondo and still hide their fear in some sort of way despite all their training? So this would be one of those examples. Now, how does that happen through the process of going through the belt system? How does one still hide in that?
I think the analogy that I made earlier of a stairway of fears is a pretty good one.
Mm-hmm.
So number one, a lot of people, the fears come out is they just quit. Another way that they do it is they may have somebody running interference for them. They may be a kid and their parent may call me up and say, oh, you know, such and such can't break boards because her violin instructor said that it will be bad for her hands. Mm-hmm. I get that a lot. I get a lot of people who, in fact, this was something that early on running my dojang, I had to learn that I just need to be strong enough to counter that because I would get that a lot. People would be afraid to break boards, which is ironic because it's the most empowering thing you can do and the most wonderful. And there would be all kinds of excuses. I am this, I'm a doctor, I'm a plastic surgeon, I'm this, I'm that. And then I realized how finally that was just such an excuse and a way to hide your fears by saying, well, I'm just going to opt out of this because I have this great reason. When I had, a guy teaching my karate classes, and this guy is one of the foremost neurosurgeons in the world. And I remember we were breaking boards at one point, and he's like, "Oh, like give me three." Mm-hmm. I'm like, "Are you afraid about your hands?" He goes, "Who cares?" He goes, "They'll heal. They'll be fine." He goes, "What are you talking about?" And suddenly I realized, no, these other people were making these excuses, and it was
how often does it happen that somebody breaks their hand?
Like never. I mean, the only way that would ever happen is if you were in an extremely high-level black belt in an extremely high-level tournament and you were trying to do something crazy like break concrete.
Right, and really stretch yourself. Mm-hmm.
I mean, in a regular martial arts school, I've never seen it happen.
Honestly. I've never seen it happen either, and I've taken martial arts since I was a kid. I'm sorry, go ahead.
As I say, it's just more like a way of people being afraid and trying to do, as you say, not face those fears. So that would be a way that people could not address those fears even if they were doing training, is because if they opted out of part of the program. Or if they hadn't progressed high enough, as I said, to get to the top of that stair, towards the top of that stairs where some of their major fears were hiding.
Right. So that's a good argument for making your way all the way to the black belt, which I did not do. But that maybe some of your fears are closer to the black belt level than they are at the white belt level.
Yeah.
And so if you don't take yourself all the way through the process, you're not going to have the opportunity to uncover what those are. So I've never thought of that before. Thank you. What are some of the philosophical precepts that you teach in your Taekwondo Dojang?
Philosophical. Well, I mean, I could go very old school on you and tell you what the five tenets of Taekwondo are, which are courtesy, integrity, self-control, indomitable spirit, courtesy, I'm missing one, perseverance. But I'm going to say it actually boils down to respect. I think, in my opinion, that kind of like if you're a Christian, you talk about the Ten Commandments and you have 10 philosophies that you do, but you can say, well, it really ultimately boils down to treat people like you want them to treat you. I would say it's the same, as respect, which is ironically, they both mean the same thing.
Well, that's interesting because respect for many Americans is a complicated thing. As I'm someone who grew up in an Asian household, so I know I have a very different view of respect than many non-Asian friends of mine. Can you explain in your experience why you think that Americans typically have a problem with respect, the concept of respect?
I think there's two reasons. Number one, I think it's a lack of really properly understanding what respect is. I think in this culture, somehow it's become synonymous with like kowtowing to someone. And I think a better understanding of it is kind of like what we talked about, like the golden rule, or I said just a moment ago. It's just treating people like you would like them to treat you, which is essentially what it is, and politeness and good manners. I think the second reason, though, is that there is an element to that, that if someone knows a whole lot more than you do about something, then there is having a respect for that idea. And I think that that is a huge problem that people have, and I think it ultimately comes down to bad self-esteem. A lot of people, and I never really fully understood this myself until I started to get to be, until I was actually running a dojang myself. The idea is that following orders and doing what someone tells you to do and not having an issue with it, not being surly,
having an attitude, right?
It takes a massive amount of self-respect to just say, okay, great, that person knows more than me, and I'm going to do it, like, and not have an issue with it. Because when you think about it, why should you? If someone knows something and knows more about something than you do, or they're older than you are, or they're your boss, or your teacher, which is, and especially in the teacher concept, is where the martial arts concept of respect is coming in. Why should you have an attitude about that? Like, if someone they're teaching you to do something, you should do it. But why? Because they know more than you. And you should want to learn and get to be better. But I think that that concept, and I think because people have bad self-esteem, that just gets lost.
Right. It's what I see a lot of times in patients is that you have to have a lot of courage to be able to acknowledge what you don't know and where you have to grow. And it's hard to grow if you feel shamed or bad about yourself for everything that you don't already know or you can't already do. So that's interesting. So you think that Americans have a skewed perspective of self-esteem then?
I don't want
to. Kind of a big statement.
I think it's too big of a statement to single out Americans. I think you could say, I think a lot of people, yeah, have a bad sense of self-esteem. Yeah.
It's just different.
It's just different. And I don't want to pick on Americans, and I don't want to pick. And I think it's also kind of like an old school versus a new school thing too, as well. I mean, America 67 years ago is not what it is now. Just like if you go, I mean, some of the most disrespectful kids I get now are like these young Korean kids that come in and they're 10 years old. I mean, cause I think it's being lost everywhere. I don't want to just think about America.
Right, right. So we're going to wrap up soon, but I wanted you to explain, if you could, the difference between Taekwondo and Karate, because that's a question that I get very often.
Okay. Or we can even broaden that if you want to put in Kung Fu or anything else, is that, number one, a lot of the martial arts have become not nationalistic. That might be putting it a bit too strongly, but each country has taken different martial arts and taken kind of what their nationalistic trait is or something that they're very intrinsically good at and put their stamp on it and created a martial arts with those traits. For example, Taekwondo comes from Korea. So difference number one from Taekwondo and karate is that it's Korean. So you're going to say ki up instead of kia. You're going to call a uniform a dobu instead of a gi. So number one, just the nationalistic. And then number two, for example, karate or Taekwondo's major thing is legs, strong leg muscles. And a Korean person will tell you that this comes because Korea is such a mountainous country. Everybody's climbing all the mountains all their lives. Koreans have strong legs. And that's the legend, is that's where it comes from. So that's why the kicks are the strength in Taekwondo. Whereas in karate, it's going to be more about the hand movements. But honestly, as far as martial arts go, karate and Taekwondo are probably the two closest martial arts of any other, which is always as interesting that people, I think that's why people are always asking differentiate, because they are so similar. Where something like Kung Fu comes from China, the movements are very circular, where, and very, kind of using a person's energy against themselves, if talking about your opponent, whereas Taekwondo or karate, they're very linear and they're very striking and very direct.
Interesting. And, lastly, the thing I wanted to ask you is how high can you go in a black belt system in Taekwondo?
I don't know. It depends if you're Chuck Norris or not. I'm just laughing because it depends. I mean, it is, if you do it the traditional, the old school way, it is controlled in Korea, and they tend to be a little bit have a self-protected nationalist pride about it. I mean, and if you're not Korean, it's very hard to progress past a certain, maybe past, let's call it fifth level black belt, sixth if you're not Korean. Once again, if you're a movie star and you're Chuck Norris, yes. Yeah, go ahead and give it Chuck Norris. Yeah, I'm confusing Bruce Lee and Chuck Norris of all people. Don't know why I'm doing that. But like, you know, if you're a movie star, yes, they'll make you a high level black belt. But honestly, I would say past fourth degree, it probably doesn't matter anyway.
Wow, so you're a fourth degree black belt, so that's very impressive. Congratulations. I mean, I know it's been a while, but, you know, now that I know that in context, I'm duly impressed. All right, so we're going to come to a close now. I just wanted to ask you if there's anything else you wanted to share with our listeners, anything at all about martial arts, its philosophy, Taekwondo in particular, before we close.
I think we've covered most of them. I guess what I would say, I know so many people out there that want to do it, and for all the reasons that we spoke about, they may have a certain amount of fear around, or they may even not even fear. They may just not know where to begin. And I would say just take the first step. Just go on the internet, search on martial arts in your neighborhood, walk to a couple schools, get a good feeling for them, find an instructor that you feel comfortable with, and just take a little baby step. And if that's too uncomfortable, take a kickboxing class. A lot of the people that teach those kickboxing classes are actually martial artists. And find a kickboxing class you like, find an instructor you like, and then maybe talk to them about it. But just, I just say baby steps. I think that is my most important message for anybody out there for conquering fear or starting the martial arts program or anything. Just take one little step.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Mary Claire. Again, to our listeners, I'm here with Master Mary Claire, fourth degree black belt in Taekwondo. And thank you so much for being on the show today and sharing your insights. It was really interesting.
Oh, thank you. You're most welcome. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the privilege.
And to the listeners, I just want to say, as always, knowledge is power, and please make use of everything you've learned today. And much love to you all.
Thank you so much for joining us this week. Please join Suzanne Hill for another edition of the Healing Power Hour next Wednesday at 11 a.m. in the West, 2 p.m. in the East, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Have a healthy week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.